our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, through its waters roar and foam, and the mountains quake with their surging. There's a river whose streams make glad to the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at break of the day. Nations are in an uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see. Come and see what the Lord has done. Desolations he has brought to the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear and burns the shields within the fire. He says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. For the Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress.
Good morning, Harbor. How's it going? My name's Lindsay. I work with Sojourn Collegiate Ministry at Boston University, and I've been here a few times, so you may remember me, but if you don't, that's totally okay. Last week, you heard from my fellow Sojourner, Nate Rubright. He talked about the Beatitudes and Blink 182. And next week, you'll hear from our executive director, Tim Hawkins. I believe his daughter, Nevely, is actually joining him as well. Nev will actually be interning with me at BU this upcoming school year. And my other Sojourn BU coworker, Rico, and his wife, Megan, and their two little boys are here as well. And Molly, our Sojourn teammate from University of Rhode Island, is here today as well. So you get a July full of Sojourn this month. Now, I don't know about you, but summer has been very full for me so far. Now, don't get me wrong. It's been like really good things. I've had a ton of fun, but it's just been really busy. And this past year was a particularly rough one for me and left me feeling pretty drained. So I was kind of banking on having this like nice, quiet summer so I can get that rest between the school years that you teachers know about. But that's like never the case. So it's great. But in all the chaos, this verse in Psalms has popped up for me. And it's just kind of been sitting there waiting for me to engage with it. And the funny thing is, last summer, the first sermon I gave here at Harbor was on Psalm 46. So next summer, you know what to expect. This psalm, Psalm 46, particularly verse 10, that first part, be still and know. This verse has been on my heart, but I've also been very actively avoiding it. So maybe a busy summer isn't fully by chance. So as a side note, if you know me, you know I love a road trip. And not just that, I love a solo road trip. So like I'm a giant introvert. So solo time on the road is great. One of the best trips I ever took was in the summer of 2021. I took 2 months and I drove the perimeter of the United States. I stopped and saw family and friends all along the way, went through 30 states, drove 10,000 miles. I swam in both oceans, the Gulf of Mexico, and replaced my alternator. So it was great. But the question I get most often about my road trips is, what do you do? And, you know, it's a legit question. And the answer is whatever I want. Sometimes I stop at roadside attractions. Like this summer, I went to the Jimmy Carter Peanut. Sometimes I swing by national or state park. Sometimes I actually get out of the car and like go for a run or something. Most recently, I raided donuts from here to Alabama. In case you're wondering, Whole Donuts in Asheville, North Carolina, Carolina was the winner. So you should definitely check that place out. But I also spend just a lot of time with myself. Sometimes I'll like start talking or praying out loud. And then suddenly I've realized that my prayers have stopped and I've just been in silence for a while without even really realizing it. I may not even be thinking about anything. I'm just kind of letting the silence fill me and engage me. Sometimes those prayers bring out words or feelings that I've been holding back, even if I didn't realize I was holding it back. You see, I tend to internally process and compartmentalize what I'm thinking and feeling. And I do this like really slowly until each piece has kind of been analyzed. And very rarely do I express things or feelings without first analyzing them. So this time in the car really gives me time to process without any sort of deadline. And it gives me kind of the safety to let things out as I'm feeling them without having to kind of pick through it all. But this year, I made sure to fill that road trip up with lots of audiobooks. And when I stopped for a hike in West Virginia, I had plenty of true crime podcasts downloaded and like ready to listen to, which in hindsight wasn't like the best idea since I was solo on this trail. But you know, whatever. I stopped at one point in Gettysburg to go for a run, and I had like a full playlist ready and made sure to pay plenty of attention to the wildlife and really ignore my own heart and mind. Like I said, I was very actively and intentionally ignoring this verse that God kept placing in front of me. Like, I didn't want to be still, and I really didn't want to be quiet. Because I knew if I were to do those things, then these floodgates would open up, right? And all the careful compartmentalization that I'd been doing over the past couple of years would just like fully collapse. And then not only would I have to process it all, but I'd have to feel things. And I work really, really hard on not doing that. But if I kept my mind busy and turned up the noise around me, then I figured it would keep those gates shut up like nice and tight. You see, the part of this verse that kept messing with me was this really annoying word, and. That was definitely the part here that you thought I was going to focus in on, right? The word and. But the problem with this word is that it makes this verse non-dualistic. It's not be still or no. Because I don't think I really would have a problem with that. Like, I already knew what I was supposed to do. I was just actively avoiding it. And I don't really have any problems with being still. I spent 2 months in a car. Like, that's not a problem for me. But it's when I put these two together that the issues arise. Because when you still yourself and know something, you like know it. You don't just, you know, understand or cognitively get it. You know it. And that knowing is found in the stillness. And in that, the knowing that is found in the stillness is the type of knowing that works its way into your heart and forces you to respond to it. And that response changes you. In her book, Native: Identity, Belonging, and Rediscovering God, author Caitlin Curtis says this: truth is somehow both the work of uncovering what we didn't know was there and the work of seeing what we knew was there the whole time. Truth is taking off the bandage so the wound can really heal. Often it is the most painful possibility, and yet seeing the truth leads us to the good work that waits for us, for the endless possibilities to create what we did not know could be created. We searched, we found truth, and now we get to work. The type of knowing that comes with being still is uncomfortable. Even though I come out better and more whole every time I've allowed myself to go to these spaces, it's still hard to willingly enter into that place. When we get into the stillness, not only do we find God, but we find ourselves. And that can be scary, because once we know, we can't unknow. And knowing is really just the start of the journey. In case you're wondering, I don't think that stillness is strictly a physical stillness, but more like a heart posture. Actually, some of the best ways for me to enter into that state is through physical movement, like going for a hike, a run, a swim, or even just a walk. And then sometimes it's, you know, driving through North Dakota 7 weeks into a road trip. Stillness is not about what I'm doing with my body, but it's about where I'm willing to go. And it's also not necessarily a mental stillness. I mean, I have ADD and OCD, so my mind is rarely still. In fact, when it does finally zone in on a singular thought, it's usually some obsession or hyper-focused thought, and I will be there for a long while. Or I'm counting something super random. My mind is a weird place. But here's the thing. God knows how my mind works. I mean, God created it. So instead of trying to fight the way that God made me to be, I've learned to let my thoughts be what they are. And usually, somewhere in the rambling, I find my way to the knowing and the truth that I've been fighting. Glennon Doyle said at some point, we learn how to please and not how to know. I've recognized that even in my prayers, I'm working to please, to make sure that my words are ones that are pleasing to God. You know, that there are others focused, so I guess I don't seem too selfish or something. I try to remember this long list of prayer requests that have been sent my way, and also make sure that each request gets its equal time and energy. And then, it's no wonder that prayer can be very exhausting when you're trying to make it right. But when I let go of that need to please and instead just open my heart to God and let my mind be the crazy, chaotic mess that it is, I find truth and I find grace and I find hope. See, stillness is about your heart. Are you willing to put aside what you think things should be or what they need to look like? Are you willing to stop forcing a way forward and do what Carrie Underwood said and let Jesus take the wheel? Are you willing to take what comes and not just listen to what God is speaking to you, but to actually hear it and transform it? Are you willing to know? A few weeks ago, I was in Oregon visiting my family, and the message at church that Sunday was on John 15, specifically the part where Jesus is like, I'm the vine and you're the branches. And this verse in particular caught my attention. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. So I grew up with the NIV, which basically has the same translation as this verse, but it doesn't use the word abide. And I have to admit, I'd heard the word before, but I didn't really know what it meant. It's not one I usually use in daily conversation. So I looked it up, and this is what I found. It means to accept or act in accordance with, to be able to tolerate, or to continue without fading or being lost. And it was that last definition that really caught my eye. Continue without fading. Throughout scripture, the Hebrew and Greek words used for abide can also be translated as to dwell, to stay, to remain, and a list of other things. To abide with God is to find our solidness, to find our footing. And the great thing about God is that God is not just solid ground, but holy ground. And we have the constant invitation to stay there with God, to not just be right with God, but to be with God. There's this communal aspect to abiding. It says, abide in me as I in you. It's not just us going to God, but it's God being with us as well. There's a time aspect. I mean, you can't dwell for like just 1 second. There's like this lengthiness implied in the word. Abiding is also not a one-off. The very idea of remaining or continuing suggests some sort of repetitive act. When we can be still and find our knowing, then we can abide. We can remain in the stillness and the waiting and trust that God is in that space with us. We can take our knowing and we can move to transforming into something more solid. Abiding is also not passive. To remain in the stillness is an active choice, to endure the work of transformation. And this is not an easy thing to do. It's hard and it requires both patience and endurance. But if we can push through, if we can continue without fading or pulling away, then I believe truly beautiful things will begin to happen, the fruit that we will begin to see. To abide in the stillness means to stay in the knowing that we're loved, that we're chosen, that we're forgiven, that we are wanted and welcome with no strings attached and no exceptions. That knowing can be hard to sit in. Not only does it require radical self-acceptance and love, but it also requires being honest with the parts of us that might need some reworking. So this summer, while I was religiously avoiding the stillness, in a moment of weakness, I paused. And here's what I wrote during that moment. I also redacted the names, so. You're so worried about this person being isolated, but you are extremely isolated right now. You're worried about this person not taking time for health during the year, but you waited for summer all year for rest. Maybe you're so worried about these traps for others because you are currently caught in them. And this is exactly why I had been avoiding the stillness and the knowing, because that's when God calls you out with stuff like that. The danger of being still, of knowing, is that you may not always like what you find. And then you have to decide if you're going to do anything about it. And let's be clear, you can do nothing. You can keep on going the way you're going, but it's no longer out of ignorance and instead becomes an active decision. Or you can do the hard work of transformation and take steps closer to becoming the person that God has created you to be. These steps towards transformation is the abiding. It's how we regain our solidity so that we can continue without fading or being lost. So we have our stillness and we have our knowing and we have our abiding, but there's still another really important word that I wanted to bring up today. So going back to Psalm 46, a word pops up at the end of the stanzas. This word is also found in a lot of the other Psalms as well. Does anybody know what word I might be talking about? I can't really hear you, sorry. Refuge? No, it's actually this word, Selah. Has anybody heard that one? Selah, yeah. I'm probably saying it incorrectly, so. So even this word, even though the word Selah is used in the Bible 74 times, nobody really knows what it means. And not in the way that, like, we don't know what shalom means because there's no English equivalent to it, right? No, it's in the way that this isn't actually a word. But people who are, like, way smarter than me have come up with some ideas as to its purpose and its meaning. The most accepted definition is that it means some form of pause. Whether it's in the form of a musical interlude or a way to underline the magnitude of what was just said, the idea of Selah is to stop and listen. The previous idea was important enough that the reader or listener needs a moment to take it all in and consider deeply. In music, Selah is a signal for the choir to quiet their voices and let the instruments take over, so that in the silence, the music can sink in. Now, I don't know about you, but whenever I come to a part in my reading or my listening that makes me pause, I always go back and I reread or I re-listen. Sometimes I'll even go back multiple times just to make sure that I have the words right and I understand what those words are saying. Selah isn't just about stopping and thinking for a moment and then moving on. That pause should make us go back to take the words in and sit with their meaning. It should move us to a place of contemplation, a place where the message is absorbed into the very marrow of our bones. Selah means pause, but it, to me at least, it also means repeat. A while back, I was talking with my therapist, and she asked me how I receive encouragement, and I really struggled giving her an answer. So I spent some time thinking about it, and I finally realized that it was through written words. Text, emails, letters, anything written. When people give me verbal encouragement, it's just way too easy for me to dismiss it, either by deflecting with humor or just like flat out rejecting what they have to say. But when it comes to written encouragement, I'm forced to sit with it. If I don't accept what they have to say the first time I read it, it's there for me to come back to again and again, as many times as needed until I can receive it. It forces me to pause. It's like God has written an invisible Selah at the end of each note to remind me to take a minute and come back to this and let it sink in. Entering into the stillness, taking the time to know, requires Selah moments of pausing. Pausing what we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish, our own agendas, our hopes and our dreams, our fears. Pausing everything and giving God an opportunity to speak into that pause. Pausing helps us to position ourselves to have the eyes to hear and, the ears to hear and the eyes to see how God is at work in us, among us, and through us. In the pause, we allow the knowing to sink in and become transforming. We allow the stillness to become abiding, and then we pause and we do it all over again. Be still and know. Abide in me. Selah. So I'm going to do something a little different here. And instead of ending with a traditional prayer and transition into communion and worship, I'm actually going to lead us through what's called a prayer of examine. And if you've never done one before, that's totally fine. I got you. A prayer of examine is a spiritual practice of reviewing in order to kind of retune ourselves into the sacred in the ordinary life around us. It prompts us to remember God's presence, express gratitude, and reflect. In other words, it helps us to be still and to know. It gives us a way toward the abiding. So this prayer is one that was written by Ashley Island. She's an author and pastor out of Michigan. And this is based on Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24. So as I begin, I'm going to ask you, you don't have to do it right this second, but I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and to get into a comfortable posture. I'll give you a word to contemplate and meditate on. And I just ask that you let yourself follow the prompt of your heart. You know, those Selah nudges that you kind of feel deep inside you and just see where it takes you. We'll take a minute or two of silence between each prompt for you to listen to where God is inviting you. And I ask that you consider to write down anything that might be revealed in this time. If this makes you feel uncomfortable, that's totally fine. I do, however, invite you to push into that discomfort, but you're also welcome to just hang out, take a bathroom break, grab a drink, find your own way to engage in this time. There's no right or wrong way to do this. All I ask is that you just respect the silence and the engagement of the people around you, whatever that might look like for them. So, you guys ready? This might be a little awkward, so it's going to be great. All right. So first, I ask you to silence yourself. Close your eyes. Breathe deeply. Posture your body to receive whatever God has for you in this time. I ask you to pray, search me and know my heart. Ask the Spirit to search your mind, body, soul, and heart. What will be found there today? Anxiety, grief, bitterness, contentment, joy. Be willing to listen and receive without judgment. Sit patiently and wait. Pray, test me and know my anxious thoughts. Ask the Spirit to illuminate where you're holding anxiety. Is it around an interaction, a cause or issue, a relationship, a shortcoming? What is that anxiety pointing to below the surface? Ask for the Spirit to speak peace to that anxiety, for God's faithfulness to fill any void. Pray, see if there is any offensive way in me. Ask the Spirit to reveal anywhere where you, in thought, word, or action, have offended God's heart. Write these down as they come. Humbly ask for forgiveness that's found in Christ. Note any ways that you might seek forgiveness from others. Remember that it's God's loving kindness that leads you to transformation. Pray and lead me in the way everlasting. Ask the Spirit to reveal any next steps you might take out of this time. Write them down, commit to doing them. Thank God for His love for you today and for the Spirit's guidance.